The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
Hi, this is John Pelkey, Run Disney Race host. You're listening to the Mickey Miles Podcast with Mike and Michelle.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 323 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Michelle Scribner-McLean, and with me on the show from the WDW Today podcast is my co-host, Michael Scopa. Welcome to the show, Mike.
It's a pleasure to be here, Michelle. Thank you for inviting me and all that jazz.
You sound very, very official.
Well, you know, it's an official day here in New Hampshire.
Official what
it's
day?
It's officially Sunday
today. Okay. Well, it may not be when we post the show, which is on Thursday, right? That's so happy Thursday to you.
Official Thursday.
Yeah. You ready for Wine and Dine?
I am ready for Wine and Dine, but is... I already said that before.
Yeah.
Is Wine and Dine ready for me? Okay. Yeah, I'm ready. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of people and running nighttime race, which I usually don't do a lot, but...
Have you trained any nighttime running?
If you count early morning as nighttime, yes.
But there's no sun. Right. I guess that counts. All right. We have a very special guest on today's show, and her name is Dani Holmes-Kirk. And in addition to being a runner and a Disney fan, she is also a Boston girl, which always makes me excited because I love talking to people from my home area. She is she has a website, which is weightoffmyshoulders.com, and a Facebook page that has a lot of likes. And Dani, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel like I'm going to let a lot of people down because I don't have the stereotypical Boston accent.
But you can turn it on if you want to, right?
I mean, I'm wicked, awesome. Wicked good at it. I'm wicked good at it. I got it.
So I have to give a shout out. Well, I have a few shout outs, but the first one is to my friend Justin, who is a friend to you too. And Justin introduced me to Dani. But also I have some other ones. One is for Michelle McNally, who's training for her first 5K. Catherine Carroll, who did 26.2 today. And Cheryl Edgerton, who did 23 miles, and she's going to be doing the Richmond Marathon. So anyway, getting back to Dani. Dani, we have you on the show because this topic comes up a lot in this podcast, and you and I have had lots of conversations. But you actually used Weight Watchers to first lose some weight, and then you were able to maintain it while you ran a marathon. So I was wondering if you could just start off by telling everybody your story of weight loss.
Sure. It's crazy to think that I actually joined Weight Watchers just about 6 years ago. And that wasn't really where my weight loss journey started, per se. It's something that I kind of dealt with for most of my life, which a lot of people can relate to. Mm-hmm. And I think my highest was about 235 pounds. That's at least when I stopped stepping on the scale because I didn't want to see any larger number.
People can relate to that.
You know, it was one of those things where I was like, I'm not buying pants anymore because I can't handle seeing like a size 20 or a size 22. So I just lived in sweatpants for a while because that to me was like, oh, it's extra large. It doesn't really matter because there's not a number attached to it. I think that was the self-denial that I was living in. So I'd say that was probably the highest I got to. And it was about 2006 when I finally decided to start running. And it really was one of those things where I was like, well, a lot of people I know that run tend to be healthy. They tend to be, you know, smaller for the most part of what I saw, and thought, well, maybe I'll try running as a way to lose weight. And so I started running and I didn't really see a lot of like the pounds dropping. And it was happening, but it wasn't really happening as quickly as I maybe thought it was going to be. And so I ran my first marathon in September 2006 and promptly decided that I was never doing that again.
Which one was it, Danny?
It was the Clarins des Mars in New Hampshire.
Oh.
I finished fourth to last, and no one was at the finish line when I got there. They almost took the finish line down before I even got there, the timing. Wow. Like, the massage people were gone, food people were gone. And so I was like, I'm never doing this again. That was a horrible experience. So I swore off running for 4 years. Then I decided that I really wanted to start losing weight again in a really healthy way. So I joined Weight Watchers. The first day I got to Weight Watchers, I was 217 pounds. And I remember it very vividly. And what Weight Watchers taught me is something that I think a lot of people know, but sometimes we ignore, is that you can't outwork out a bad diet. I was very much under the impression that if I went to the gym and did the elliptical machine, I could then eat all the tater tots I wanted. And apparently that doesn't work. And that was sort of the reason why I wasn't really losing weight. So I started incorporating better eating habits, learning that, you know, fruits and vegetables were my friend, and I could still eat tater tots, but I didn't need to do it every single day. Mm-hmm. I was actually living in Chicago at the time, and so there's a lot of places that had tater tots, which is why that's usually my reference. But I swore on the first day of Weight Watchers that I would do this journey, but I would not give up beer, wine, or tater tots. Mm-hmm. And it was one of my things. And in 6 years, I haven't. And when I started really ramping up the mileage and decided to give running another chance after I had back surgery and the doctor said I wouldn't be able to run again, and then I needed to prove him wrong, as many of us do. And so I started running again. And I really learned that my body needed fuel. And it didn't have to be a bad thing to use what we call, you know, activity points, or for other people that don't do Weight Watchers, being able to use those calorie burned. And that's where I really started learning that I could train for a marathon and still lose weight. It really was coming down to balance, and actually learning that when I came home from a long run, I did not have to eat everything in my kitchen. Mm-hmm. Even though that's exactly what I felt like doing. Mm-hmm. It was kind of learning to prepare before I went out for the long run. Like, let's have a safe snack ready to go when you get home, so that while you're kind of coming down from those hungry horrors or that rungry feeling that you're having, you can then make a more educated choice of what to eat. Now, that's not saying that after some long runs, I didn't go and have pizza and beer, because I'm human. But there was more of that balance during training that I didn't have the first time around.
So interesting. So when you first started running, did you know nothing about running at all?
I knew nothing. Hmm. My dad was a runner. And so I watched him run and thought that was, I don't understand why he's doing this. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I always played positions in sports that involved the least amount of running. Like, I was a catcher in softball. So I didn't really have to run. So when I decided to do it, I literally went to the gym the first weekend, January 2005, actually, was that first week, and I attempted to run a quarter mile on the treadmill. And when I did that and didn't pass out, the next week I added another quarter mile. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of built up very gradually that way. So my first 5K was March 2005. And I remember not really liking it at all.
Hmm.
And I finished in 38:21, and I was really psyched, and it started going from there. But I didn't – if you look at the pictures from my first marathon, I was wearing like a cotton t-shirt, basketball shorts, a stopwatch. Mm-hmm. And then you fast forward 6 years and you see my second marathon, where I actually learned about, you know, GPS watches and singlets and compression shorts and socks and all that stuff. And it was light and day, night and day, to see when I actually did some research and trained properly that the experience was 1,000 times better.
That's so cool. So I know that you and I have talked, and one of the things that we've talked about is you have run the Boston Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time you ran it, you gained weight. Can you tell me about that? Because I've had the same experience.
Yeah, so it was actually, so it was my second marathon ever. So when I hit goal with Weight Watchers in 2012, instead of buying myself like a cute pocketbook or something, I decided to sign up for a marathon. So I ran the Rock and Roll Savannah Marathon in November 2012. And it was during that training cycle that I had actually gained weight. And I wasn't really sure why. I was, you know, I was staying within my Weight Watchers program and I was, you know, doing what I was told or what I thought I was supposed to do. And the weight was creeping up as I was training. And I knew a lot of people said, you know what, that's what happens during training. You know, that's kind of everyone's default response. It's just what happens. And I was like, you know what, there's got to be a way for me to be able to lose weight. I see other people do it. And so when I then decided to do Boston, where I was lucky enough to be chosen as part of Teddy's team for the American Stroke Association, I actually decided to start using more of what I call those, you know, those activities points, those calories burned. And that's when I actually realized that I was under goal when I ran Boston the first time.
So what you're saying is that, say you run 10 miles and you, I'm just going to pull numbers out of a hat. You burn 1,000 calories. I mean, it's probably more than that. But let's say you burn 1,000 calories or you earn 10 Weight Watchers points. For your first marathon, you were not eating all those points?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And so for your second one, you decided that you were going to eat the points that you actually earned that day.
Yes. And it wasn't necessarily all of them. It was kind of that trial and error that I played around with, mm-hmm. you know, that I realized, wow, on the day of the long run, I'm not really that hungry or that ravenous necessarily. It's really the day after that hit me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something where people learn their own bodies and maybe it's the day before they end up eating a little bit more. But that's where I started actually playing around with using those extra points. And that's when I found that I actually was losing. And it was, you know, there isn't a science like, you know, eat 2/3 of them and you're going to lose. Because again,
everybody's body is different.
Yeah. But I learned for me is that I had to at least use some of them. And then my body started releasing that weight. And I was like, oh, you know, it was maybe holding on to it because it needed that extra energy. And I'm not an expert. You know, that's just something that worked for my body. And I noticed that marathons since then, you know, I have been able to lose. Like when I ran Boston this year, I lost like 9 pounds during training. Mm-hmm. And it was, again, kind of playing around with what I was fueling with, how much I was fueling, and kind of found a system that worked for me. But it's really scary at the beginning, especially when you're someone that's lost a lot of weight, to say, okay, I'm going to eat extra food.
Right.
And that's something where you're like,
counterintuitive.
Oh, right. I've been told for all these years, you know, eat less, move more. And for some people, maybe that works, but I noticed that for me, it didn't. And so I was like, okay, if I have to, you know, I'll have extra chicken, or, you know, I would still splurge with like an extra slice of pizza or an extra beer. But I actually noticed that I was having better results when I was doing that. And I felt like I wasn't feeling deprived. I was like, you know, I did this work, but I'm still using this tracking system to be able to keep it in check.
You know, Danny, what you're saying, I mean, I've actually experienced that myself. And I guess one of the questions that I have for you that I'm thinking some of the listeners may be thinking is that, okay, if I were to do that, how soon would I see results? Would I have to do that for 5 days, for a week, for 2 weeks before I really can say, okay, I'm on the right track, I'm on the right level with my points, taking in, you know, so many points a day? How long do you think the average person would have to wait before they would see results?
So whenever I have people talk to me about whatever program they're using for weight loss, I usually tell people to give it like, you need to give it at least 3 weeks. And that's something that I noticed for me. And I don't know what you guys have kind of experienced, but you know, no matter what, when you start a new workout routine or when you start a new running training program, the first couple weeks are always something where your body's getting adjusted to, what the heck are you trying to do here? This is not what we normally do. And so I find for me and what some of my friends have noticed is that it's really giving it 3 to 4 weeks of trial and error to see what works and what doesn't. So that's at least like the time frame for me that I usually try. Does it always work in that time frame? No, I still learn something new every day. But I usually tell people at least 3 weeks.
So 3 to 4 weeks, and what would you say would be the pitfalls to avoid, to watch out for?
I would say when we stop weighing and measuring, for me, that's a big thing when it comes to accurately trying to track, however you track your food, is my eyes are much bigger than what an actual like cup is, for example. And I think a lot of people have that, right? Like, we're just used to bigger portions. So I think sticking with weighing and measuring things, at least for me, is something that helps me avoid that. Oh yeah, that's probably, you know, one cup of pasta when it's actually two. Mm-hmm. Is something where I really found that also changed in my training, was when I was really honest with myself about what a serving is. And I think that that's something where when we try to eyeball, people can kind of lose, you know, either points or calories that they weren't accurately tracking. And that's kind of where we end up going off track, is even if we're eating healthy food, we can still eat too much of a healthy thing.
And what about tracking? To me, that's always the number one thing that is a variable for me to lose weight. When I stop mm-hmm. tracking, or when I just say, oh, I kind of ate about this much, everything kind of goes after that. Do you think tracking is super important?
100% agree. And I know a lot of people that have lost, you know, a significant amount of weight. And once they do that, they can say, you know what, I have learned over this time frame what a cup is, and you know, I can track mentally. I cannot. Mm-hmm. I will still lie to myself and say that, you know, those are 14 chips when I know really they're 28. Mm-hmm. And we talked about how we both like numbers, and I was a math major. I can make any number about any other number. So 6 chips, 20 chips, they're about the same thing.
Or almonds, or whatever it is.
Exactly. So for me, I know that when I purposely stop tracking is when I know I'm off track. There are times that I'll give myself like a weekend off. Usually like when I go to a Run Disney race, I tend to give myself that time off, but it's not like I completely forget what I'm doing. It's not like I say goodbye to carrots for those 5 days. It's just, I don't have to necessarily track every single item. I give myself a little freedom because I find it then makes it easier to go back to tracking once I get home.
So I think that's super important that you lost this weight 6 years ago, correct?
I hit goal in 2012. So it's been about three years,
but you're still tracking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did an experiment. I do this experiment every once in a while where I stop tracking to see what happens. And it's inevitable that I gain every time I do this experiment. Right. And it's something where I've learned for myself, I'm going to have to track for the rest of my life if I want to keep the weight off, but I know that I'm worth it. And maybe that'll change, you know, 20 years down the road. But for me, I kind of, as a math major, as a person that likes numbers, it just keeps me feeling in control mm-hmm. when I have that accountability, which I think is what a lot of us want it for, is accountability.
Yeah, even when you're, you know, you splurge with your calories, it gets you, you're like, all right, well, I splurged today, but then for the rest of the week, I'm going to track and I'm going to be where I need to be. So yeah, it's good. So, Mike, did you have a question?
No, I'm fascinated. Yeah. I want to compliment Dani. I think that she's hit everything on, in a very, how can I put it? She's been very, calculated in how she approached this. And yeah. I think it's something that everyone should take in stride and try to do it on their own. Yeah. Really.
And it's definitely something where, and I always, you know, being a blogger and being someone that shares my life, there's a lot of times where people say, you know, I can never do what you did because I don't have that control. There are times where over this 6 years and over my whole weight loss journey that there's been weeks that have been off plan. There have been months that have been off plan. I'm currently at a point where I'm really trying to get myself refocused, and it happens to every of us. We're all human. It's not like I track every single day. There's been, as I said, weeks and months where you just can't find that mojo, but you know that you'll get there again. And I've always told myself, you know, there are certain points that are my threshold where, you know, if I see this number on the scale again, or if I get to feeling this way in my pants, that I have to reel it back in. And the other thing is now that, and I know a lot of people that have lost a lot of weight also become more active at any point in their journey. And it's starting to make that switch of saying, it's not about a number on the scale for me. It's how I feel when I run. Mm-hmm. And being able to say, you know, as someone that had back surgery, I want to keep that weight off my back because, you know, it's surgically repaired. I need to keep it off for my health. And being able to make that switch of, it's not all about the number on the scale. It's how we feel. It's how, you know, we're worth the healthy lifestyle or how we feel when we run, making sure that it's more than just that number, because that number can vary from day to day and it's nothing but a number. Being able to say, I feel amazing today and I'm happy with my choices is like such a shift that a lot of us have trouble doing, especially when you switch to maintenance and you see the same number on the scale.
Great, great points. So I know from our mutual friend, Justin, that you are a Run Disney fan, and I want to know how you got into Run Disney and maybe what your favorite races are.
Oh, that's such a hard decision. It was actually through blogging that I learned about the Run Disney races. So I did my first Run Disney race in January 2013. It's funny because when I talk to a lot of people, they feel like I've been doing Run Disney races for a long time. And I think it's just because I talk about them all the time.
You're in the right place then.
I was talking about them at our run club today with someone that I found out is doing the Star Wars 5K in April. And I just like totally geeked out and just cornered this person and was like, tell me everything about your Run Disney life. But I have done, I would say the most rewarding and challenging was doing the inaugural Dopey Challenge.
I did that too.
It was life-changing. Like every step I took, I didn't want it to stop. I cried at mile 25 of the marathon knowing that the whole journey was coming to an end. I was so sad.
That's where you and I are different. I cried because I wanted it to be over.
I didn't want it to end. I was just having so much fun out there. I had seen Dopey at mile 25. So I geeked out because I was dressed as Snow White. It was the Dopey Challenge. It was just one of those magical moments that were Disney that I'm bawling my eyes out. And I think people thought I was like hurt or sad. And I was just like, I don't want to stop. It's just so much fun. So Dopey Challenge was just life changing. I never thought I would run a mile, let alone 48 over 4 days.
48.6.
Don't
forget the
0.6. I know. Yeah, absolutely. So that was just such an amazing experience. I also did the inaugural Star Wars in Disneyland this year, which was fun. That was our first trip to Disneyland. And that was just such a different experience since it was a themed race. Compared to normally I did, you know, the marathon weekend. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting to see different folks. It wasn't just like Disney fans. This was now like Star Wars fans were there. So I found that I actually waited in longer picture lines than I was used to at Disney World. Mm-hmm. But it was cool. I mean, I waited, I think it was like 20 minutes or 25 minutes. I waited to take a picture with Darth Vader because I was dressed up as Darth Vader. So I just stood there in line and just watched my friends run by. And I was like, way to go. Like, you're awesome. And they're like, I can't believe you're waiting. And I was like, I can't believe you're not. This is the whole point of coming to Disney is, you know, for me, waiting in line for photos. So going back to the Dopey Challenge, that was my only goal, was to stop for every single character photo in all four races.
And did you?
I did.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Well, I think this is a good transition because, Mike, do you have your socks on?
My socks?
Yeah, because Danny's going to just blow them off.
I'm ready.
Yesterday, I didn't tell Mike about this, but yesterday I noticed, Danny, that you tweeted that you completed something yesterday, which I just, you can't see me, but I'm bowing down to you. It's amazing. Can you tell Mike and our listeners what you did yesterday?
Yes, I can't even believe I can actually say that it happened yesterday. Was my 365th day of running in consecutive days. So it was my 1 year anniversary of the run streak I started.
Wow. What was the...
Wait a minute now.
Let me... Are you still in... Where do you live?
I live in the Boston area.
So you ran last winter?
With 108 inches of snow.
Oh, I did. God. I ran in the blizzard. It was so much fun because you like got to run through the streets and there was no one out there but plows.
It's true.
And it was, because, you know, once your body goes numb from the cold. It's really not that bad running in the winter.
So what would constitute the minimum distance you had to run in order for it to count?
So I did minimum 1 mile. There weren't many days that I actually ran a single mile. Probably when I had bronchitis, I did. But for the most part, it was a little bit more. I think I totaled over the year 1,717 miles, which is crazy. And it included like 10 half marathons, 2 marathons, a Reach the Beach relay, a Ragnar relay, and a whole bunch of fun and selfies over that whole time.
Did you also run on a treadmill? Does that count?
I did, yes. There were times when I was sick, I didn't run outside, so I ran on the treadmill that I have in my basement. For the most part, I try to run outside because you never know what the conditions are going to be on race day. But there are times when it's just, you know, it's too late at night. I don't really want to run outside. Then I'm happy to have my treadmill at home.
That isn't that amazing? Yeah. Do you have socks or are they gone?
Can't find them now.
That is so cool. I don't know that I've ever known anybody who did that. Well, how did you get the idea, Danny? Nope.
So I have a lot of friends that are, I mean, it sounds weird to say, but I have a lot of friends that are streakers. So they really motivated me to try it. So I tried 3 other run streaks, like when the Runner's World does them. And every time I was like, this is stupid. I'm not a streaker. It's just not for me. And then I don't really know. I was kind of having this funk with running, even though I did 52 races last year, so I was running a lot, but there was something kind of missing and lacking. So I said, you know what, I'm just going to try running a couple days this week and see what happens. And then once I got to a week, I was like, well, let's keep going. And then once I got to 100 days, I was like, well, let's try for a year. And now I'm like, well, let's just see how long it goes.
So you're going to keep on doing it?
Yeah, I ran today with my run club, so we'll see long it goes. I have a marathon coming up, so I want to do it probably at least until then, and then we'll see what happens.
Danny, that you are so inspirational in so many ways.
Oh, I appreciate it.
We would love to have you come back on the show sometime.
Absolutely. We can talk about running and selfies. And
yeah.
I love taking pictures.
That's great. Her name is Danny Holmes Kirk, and her website is weightoffmyshoulders.com. You can find her on Twitter, IrishEyes1982, and Weight Off My Shoulders on Facebook. We can follow your adventures and your blogs and see how long the streak goes, you streaker. That's great. Danny, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Have so much fun at Wine and Dine. I'm so jealous.
We'll have a little toast to you.
Yes, we
Thank
will.
Thank you.
We
Share will. A Mickey pretzel for me.
Oh, definitely. So for Danny Holmes Kirk and my co-host Mike Scopa, this is Michelle Scribner-McLean saying we'll see you on the road. The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. If you would like to support the Mickey Miles podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/mickeymilespodcast. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/mickeymilespod. And don't forget, if you have any questions, you can send them to questions@mickeymilespodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.
It's Halloween, Louise! Halloween's a favorite ride. It's Halloween, everyone! Halloween's a favorite ride!